The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum when we look back at some of the stories of the week. And joining me in studio, Fine Gael Senator Barry Ward, also the Shannon spokesperson on justice, Mairead Farrell, Sinn Féin TD for Galway West, and Craig Hughes, political editor at the Irish Daily Mail. Good morning, one and all, and welcome. The stories that dominated the week, I suppose, were both sides of the Irish Sea, and they were the riots that were generated by the Southport killing of some children, and then took off from there. What was your take on all of that, Mairead? And then, of course, we had Belfast contamination.
Oh, yeah. And look, I mean, I think it would have shocked people, and it has shocked people. And I think we need to see, and we have, I think, heard as well very clearly from politicians, specifically in the north, obviously, given what's happened in Belfast, that there's absolutely no place for racism in our society. And I also think the fact that we have seen certain communities in Belfast coming together, standing up against that racism, has been a very powerful message as well. And the idea that, you know, certain people will have been intimidated, attacked, their businesses and homes have been attacked, is absolutely shocking. It is disgraceful. And there is absolutely no place for that within our society.
Now, one would have thought, given the history of the PSNI and before that the RUC with the backup of the British Army, that they would have had the experience to deal with this kind of thing, unlike some of the police forces in the UK.
Well, look, I mean, what we have seen, to be fair, is 14 years of Tory austerity, and that leaves its mark. Like, we have to be frank about that. That does leave its mark when it comes to having, I suppose, sufficient policing and all that kind of thing. It has its mark in all aspects of society, obviously, and we see that even health service and all that kind of thing. But it does have an impact, and that's the reality of it. Mm. And we have seen that then over the last number of days as well. You know, if you do cut, you know, it does have an impact.
Now, obviously, we're used to sectarian violence in Northern Ireland. It still erupts from time to time. But the idea that people who came in and started businesses, and because they're Asian or people of colour, that Belfast turns on them. I mean, I found that deeply shocking.
Well, first of all, I think what's quite, you know, what we have seen and what we've heard from the police is that they have said that there has been an element of loyalist gangs inciting this violence, bringing it towards the interfaces and that is really, really concerning. But I think what we need to see now is very much strength from communities saying that there is no place for that racism. We need to see it from the political leaders as well. We have seen that. We saw that yesterday. But like, we need to be very, very clear on that. There is absolutely no place for racism in our society. To see that type of intimidation of businesses, of homes.
It's just hard sometimes when you realise that, OK, all the skin colours of the loyalist and nationalist communities is white. But still we had kind of, if you like, interracial hatred in Northern Ireland.
Well, we had a...
If you're intertribal, shall we say.
Well, we had a very serious and long-standing conflict in the north, and it has impacted on so many people within both communities. We have obviously seen now, you know, the Good Friday Agreement, and we've seen kind of longer term. We have seen kind of, I suppose, peace, but like, this is a really deeply concerning thing. And this, I suppose, we've now seen real, you know, attacks on people because they may come from somewhere else, and there is no place for that. And it's good to see that Belfast communities have stood up and said that.
Craig?
I think it's quite concerning to see the level of racism that is no longer just bubbling beneath the surface, but coming to the surface. I think it was quite shocking to see groups in the Republic travel across the border, so-called patriots joining forces with loyalists. I mean, it would be laughable if it wasn't so serious. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be cognizant of the real risk that we have here of something similar that happened in November happening again. The ground is ripe for it to happen with any kind of flashpoint incident. We saw it'll just take one instant for it to ignite again, and I really think that the authorities really need to be vigilant, because I think it's worrying how close to the surface it's getting.
Barry?
Well, the first thing is, as you said at the very beginning, Pat, is it was founded on misinformation. So the whole thing sparked from a piece of material on social media that was wrong. And from that, you can see the heartbreaking stuff, like people who came to Northern Ireland, made a life for themselves, contributed to their community, and then you see this blatant racism, which has no part. But the interesting thing is twofold. Firstly, the people who are making these attacks on individuals, they're achieving absolutely nothing. They're not furthering their aims or furthering their policies, such as they are, whatever it is, or their ideas in any respect. But the second thing also is that it shows you the value of what Helen McEntee has talked about this week in terms of making social media company executives responsible. If they're not taking stuff down from their platforms, if they're not dealing with that proactively, that they will actually be criminally responsible personally. I think that's going to be a sea change in terms of the way the social media companies who bear responsibility.
Is it doable?
It is doable, absolutely. So in the same way that, for example, if you're a director of a company that doesn't implement the proper health and safety regulations and a worker on site for you dies as a result of an accident, you are criminally responsible for that failure to implement the health and safety regulations. It's exactly the same principle. If you're the if you're the manager
have
of something,
have people gone to jail for those kind of offences?
Yes, they have.
Okay,
yeah.
Because and, the social media companies obviously are very wealthy. So if fines are imposed on these executives, they can afford to pay them.
Exactly.
However, if they go to jail, and no amount of money might buy them out of there.
That's it. You're dealing with companies with vast financial resources. Whereas if you're somebody who actually has direct responsibility for taking action in a particular sphere, or even collective responsibility at more senior level, then you are going to be more proactive to ensure that people under you take the action that needs to be taken. And this is how we send the message.
Okay, but in the meantime, you know, the fear, as Craig mentioned, of a potential repeat of the Dublin riots and other racially focused protests, the idea that you don't face the music quickly enough. In Britain, we saw they had them before the magistrate's court. They had the body cam evidence. They locked them up.
Yeah.
Is that what we should do here?
Well, we have processes here that can't be subvented the way they can in Britain, where they don't have a written constitution. They can speed things up. And there are certain entitlements people have, and they're important rights. But if you look at the difference between now and last November, body cams is an obvious example. For example, we have that now where we didn't have it last November. And certainly there is a case for saying we should move things faster, but that is all a resources issue, which is why we've invested in more judges, more Gardaí, more powers for the Gardaí.
But you're saying that there are other things that would inhibit. Instead of arrest them, charge them, show the evidence, and then they go to jail. Saying here we can't do that?
Well, in the UK, they accelerated all that process. And the reality is, you know, it's not okay to just bring somebody in, show them the evidence, and send them to jail. That's not the way we do things.
Isn't that exactly what happens, except in a very protracted way? You bring them into court, but show the evidence. It might be 6 months later, thanks to the DPP
mulling over a file. Yeah, it doesn't have to be 6 months. I agree with you. But you can't do it all in a period of 6 to 12 hours, which is why we don't have miscarriages of justice in this country the way they have in the UK. And there is actually a reason why you should take a little bit of time. I'm not saying it should take 6 months.
But look what the effect it was, the chilling effect on the prospective rioters, because what we were expecting the night before last did not materialise.
Yeah, but Pat, you could say lots of things would have a chilling effect on people. It doesn't mean they're desirable. Like if you went out and beat them all up, for example, with truncheons and things like that, that would have a chilling effect, but nobody's saying that that's a reasonable response. We have to maintain the rule of law, because that's what all of this is based on. You're absolutely right that it takes too long as it is, and yes, we should condense that process and we should speed it up.
You get someone who thumps a guard, and they're arrested eventually. Maybe if there's a video available, CCTV, they knock on the door, they bring them before the court, and then they're let out on bail.
But they don't have to be let out on bail, first of all. There is a presumption in favour of bail generally here, but there are lots of factors that can overtake that, including the risk that the person might commit another offence. Mm. We changed the law in the 1990s on that. So I'm not saying these shouldn't be speeded up. Of course they should, but at the same time, bringing somebody in and 6 hours later having them in jail, that's less kind of modern Western European law and order than it is something you see in a third world country.
We don't have the jail capacity to put them in anyway. We don't have the capacity in our jails to put people in anyway.
That's a separate question in a sense that the revolving door might let some people out who are not a danger to society.
Well, look, I don't have the same legal background that Barry has, so I'm not going to start commenting in great detail about something that I don't have the background in. But I would be concerned, obviously, if we start speeding up massively processes when there could be the process in place for a particular reason, and we do need to be cognizant of that as well. I think that one of the things, obviously, what we've seen happen in the north, and Craig is dead right there when he says that, you know, we did see people travelling up and joining loyalist forces in Belfast there over the last number of days in terms of protests and that kind of thing. And I think that needs to be called out for what it is as well. But I do think we need to have, I think we need to have, you know, open conversations in relation to that. And I think it's good that we're having that discussion and that we saw and that that information, I suppose, came out. You know, that we had a situation whereby it was reported that certain protesters coming from Dublin were hosted by someone who was linked to the massacre in Sean Graham's bookies. So, like, I mean, it's that kind of thing, that kind of information to get out there as well.
How do you feel about the Irish flag being hijacked by these people from, you know, associated with the coup? Look, riots. I mean, as you know yourself, the IRA were accused of hijacking the national flag of this republic many times before, and now it's being hijacked by another group of people.
Well, look, I'm very proud of the Irish tricolour, and I think anybody who's watched the Olympics like myself over the last number of weeks will have seen the absolute pride in our fantastic Olympians' faces when they saw that flag go up high, and I'm very proud in that flag, as the majority of Irish, I assume all Irish people are, and we should continue to have that pride in the Irish flag. The Irish flag represents everything that's good for us, and particularly when we do look at United Ireland and looking at North, South, and also, obviously, as you'd mentioned, the conflict, that whole thing of the green and the orange coming together. It's a really powerful symbol.
Craig.
Yeah, actually, I might just go back to you talking about social media companies being brought to heel, Pat. Mm. I think that is such an unrealistic notion put forward by the Minister for Justice. We've heard this for so long. We're told that Commissioner Mann would be a new task force to come in and clamp down them. We contacted Commissioner Mann this week and they said that the duty around the larger social media companies and clamping down them lied with the European Union, or the European Commission, sorry. Yeah. So it seems like they now don't have the teeth to do any of this. We had a situation where a threatening video of someone threatening the Taoiseach of this country and his family was let stay up on one of the Meta platforms for several days despite Gardaí contacting them and asking them to take them down. I mean, the Taoiseach says that he's going to put an end to the Wild West of this. I mean, but that's what it is. And I think if there's any suggestion that the Irish government are going to be ones to clamp down on these billion dollar social media companies, I just think it's a fallacy.
I don't see why it's unrealistic. It can be done in lots. As I say, health and safety legislation is a way in which it has been done. The minister's talking about bringing in new legislation, so and Commissioner Mann will have the power to do it. It's not unrealistic. And remember, Ireland has led the way internationally in lots of areas of law where people said exactly the same thing. It's absolutely realistic. We've done it in other areas. Let's just pass the necessary legislation to give Commissioner Mann the power and the teeth, as you say, to do what they need to do. But if executives in X or Meta or whoever feel that they're the ones who are actually going to be answering and potentially going to jail at the end of the day, you will see serious action within those companies and you will see a change of institutional attitude that isn't there at the moment.
But isn't it likely that if that were to be the case and Ireland led the way and said we are going to jail, because jail is the only thing they understand, not fines, we're going to jail your executives, they say to the government, well, we're out of here. We're out of Silicon Docks. We'll move.
I just don't see that happening, to be honest with you. I mean, they're operating in lots of countries where there is much less of a rule of law. And remember, what we're talking about here is an application of the rule of law. There would still have to be evidence and a basis on which that person is criminally responsible. It's not an unreasonable position. I actually think it is not only doable, but it is what has to be done to deal with the situation where the companies aren't taking responsibility. In the same way that any company, if it's putting a product out there that's damaging the public, has to be responsible for it. I think it's totally reasonable and doable.
And at the end of the day, on the point that you were making about whether they'll leave or not, like I don't think so, but we do need to do everything that we can, and we cannot have a situation whereby these kind of threatening videos, and we've seen it now with Simon Harris, we saw it with Mary Lou McDonald as well, that there's these type of threatening videos and that they can be left up there. But like, I mean, when you have a situation where, you know, Simon Harris with very young children in the house is having that kind of, those kind of videos going up, I think really that again it'll just shock, it has shocked so many people. We can't have a situation where this continues. We've all seen the stuff that we get on, so like, I'm sure Pat, you get it too, like, you know, we all see the stuff that we get on social media, mad stuff half the time, and to be honest I just have all of it muted, you know, that kind of thing, and X actually is quite good at muting that kind of thing, but God knows what kind of stuff we get when we don't see.
Important factor, sorry to cut across you there, but it is an offence what those people are doing, and in fact the guy who made the threat against Mary Lou McDonald is already facing charges, as I understand it. The big difference is that nobody in the companies that's actually putting this stuff online is bearing any responsibility, and that's the problem.
Yeah. Going back, though, to the question of, you know, whatever the root causes are and how many people are assembled together via Telegram with hate messages and fake news and all the rest of it, the question of dealing with it, and, I mean, whether we like what they've done or not, there's no question that the British authorities, the Labour government in Britain, which would be seen as more liberal, certainly, than the government that went before, the actions they took seem to have deterred the protests. So do we need something more accelerated here than what we have?
Well, it's funny. I was watching an interview with the Director of Public Prosecutions in the UK just before coming on. And he was saying that there's teams of police officers scanning social media, and it's an offence to retweet content that is incitement to hatred. So I'm wondering if, you know, because we all see the same actors amplifying the same content on our social media platforms here, I wonder, is that a route that perhaps the authorities can take to try and stop that? Because it's the amplification that's the key. You know, these certain bad actors with large followings that are spreading all this.
Then, having isolated the offences, what do we do to accelerate our process? Because it is a deterrent. It's quite clear in Britain.
It is. Well, I think, so Barry highlighted that it might not be possible to accelerate them to that regard. But then maybe go back to his point around bail or harsher sentences at the end point. It just seems, from the broader policing context of not just the online side of it, but even outside Leinster House, I mean, when people have made threats to kill, it just seems to have been a very softly approach taken by the authorities, and perhaps there needs to be a kind of sea change approach in that regard.
I just on the whole thing of like the online stuff, because what we have seen then as well over the last number of weeks, and I just the figures don't come to spring to my mind right at this moment, somebody else might have them, but we have also seen a lot of the time that it's a huge amount of actually external, you know, these bots that are, and people that aren't actually in Ireland at all, and that is huge outside influence that is actually, you know, kind of creating a lot of the stir and that kind of thing. And, you know, it was so recently reported. And I think that's something we need to look at as well. Like, you know, why is there outside influences trying to whip up this kind of
now,
anger?
This outside influence, interesting, a comment has come through here. That stuff that you get online, you know, saying it's coming from outside the jurisdiction.
Yeah,
I get this daily in my taxi. Nurses get it daily. Shop security get it. Only when it affects politicians does something get done. There is this indigenous hatred.
We're doing our damnedest to pass a law to outline incitement to hatred and incitement to violence. It has been held up by other groups within the Oireachtas.
But it's something that we're,
not actually within government. No, there are certainly people in government parties who aren't happy with elements of it, and that's fine. But they're not holding it up, Craig, and that's important. Like, the legislation is in the Senate. I want to see it passed. The minister has made a commitment to doing a review on it on foot of complaints that have been made by opposition senators, for example. And I'd like to see that happen. But that's what we're trying to do. So it's kind of, if there are people complaining about the hate speech legislation, for example, and what's being said to them in taxis or wherever else, you know, they're speaking out of both sides of their mouth. We have to allow the government to
move on to a related matter, I suppose, and it's the way the Garda Síochána is run. And we read a report in the Irish Times today that the commissioner is not going to seek an extension. And in fact, on this programme, he told us that, you know, this was the pinnacle of his career, and when his time was up, he would retire. So what is your reaction, Barry?
Well, I think he's entitled to. He has given service, and he's reached an age where he's entitled to retire, and I can totally understand why he has decided to take that retirement. It's at a particularly difficult time, I think, for policing, increasingly across Europe, but in Ireland as well. And I think, you know, at a time when we talked about the criticisms levelled, I mean, thinking of one of my colleagues in the Senate who has criticised him for not being Irish, to use her phrase. So that's what he's up against all the time. So I can understand why he doesn't want to continue with it.
I think we've made it too tough for him between the approaches of the GRA, who every time they come on air make it less and less appealing to potential recruits because they're always complaining. And then on the other hand, the government, has it been active enough in trying to recruit new people?
Oh, no, I think the government has been very active in trying to recruit people. And I have been critical of some of the things the GRA have done, but I also recognise that they have a job to do in terms of representing their members. So there are competing interests there all the time. But in terms of Drew Harris personally, I can totally understand why he has come to the end of a particular term and wants to draw a line under
it. Right.
I think one of the things from some of the coverage today, or the coverage that I'd seen, it does seem, though, more broadly, because, you know, what we've seen is then that Garda representatives said that they're concerned, you know, will anybody really kind of want to go for that job next, or where will it be?
There's a pension rule.
There is a pension rule. And that seems to be something that should be easy enough
to
actually be.
It doesn't just apply to the guards, it applies across the public service, so it's not easy. If you were to change it for the guards, you've got to change it for every civil servant.
Yeah, but Barry, sometimes things can, like, you know, I think sometimes we do overcomplicate things, where anytime there's something that, you know, could actually be fixed, we're always told, well, this is too complicated. But I think we do need to look, though, more broadly in the whole issue of morale. Like, you know, if there's an issue there in terms of morale and of people and wanting to go forward, you know, then we do need to look at that. And like, this has been an issue for some time now.
And Mairead, without wishing to be smart about it, do you think putting up a picture of Gardaí outside a tenement house in terms of the evictions of old is a helpful way to boost Garda morale, as your colleague did?
Like, I mean, are you talking now about Ono?
Yeah, Brian? I am. I just think you can't do both.
So do you, Barry, do you think that, like, that has actually a tweet or Instagram post by Ono Brin actually has more impact than your party having the Justice
Ministry for over 10 years at this moment?
You know, you're in government and you know that you've held the Justice Ministry.
We've done an awful lot to improve Garda resources.
Well, you obviously have not, no harm to you.
Craig, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I think Drew Harris will be remembered as the most unpopular Garda Commissioner within the Gardaí, probably perhaps in the history of the state. I mean, when there was a no confidence motion put down against him, it really was unprecedented. I think it'll be a struggle if they go externally to recruit from this due to the conditions around it. And I think the Garda Síochána is in a really difficult place at the moment in terms of not having adequate resources and crucially the personnel.
Do you think it was to do with disappointment that there were the top job didn't go to one of the boys or girls in the force, and that the recruitment by Drew Harris since of people from outside the force to top jobs has been...
I think it's also clear that he clamped down on some bad practices in Garda Síochána as well, which didn't make him popular, but, you know, could also have been for the greater good as well. So there's a bit of that going on as well. Let's be clear about this. But I think when you go back to the initial search to fill that job, it's not going to be an easy task.
All right. Well, it appears from the reporting that he's indicated he's not interested in an extension, even though the government, the current government, would like him to so do. Now, I want to move on to another potential change of government, and that's in the United States. One way or the other, Joe Biden's gone. So whether Kamala Harris takes the top job or whether Donald Trump returns to the top job is a very interesting and, at the moment, somewhat entertaining question, Barry.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really interesting to see how the narrative's completely changed on this. And we have gone from a situation where the election talk was all about Joe Biden's capacity to now a situation where Kamala Harris has very effectively positioned herself as the prosecutor against the felon. And now this week, with the introduction of new vice presidential candidate for the Democrats, who is somebody I really, really like, Walsh, appears to be in every respect a thoroughly decent, honourable person, and exactly what I think American men particularly need as a role model, because the toxicity that comes with Trump and Fox News and all the rest is really disappointing. But the juxtaposition between Walsh as a VP candidate for the Democrats and Vance on the Republican side, who's done huge damage to Trump and is just a very weird individual. You can see
and
the
yet
money.
He is the embodiment of the American dream. You know, he wrote that book, Hillbilly Elegy, about his really tough upbringing, then going through the Marines and then on to college. I mean, he should actually be an ace in the hole for Donald Trump if he didn't start doing, quote unquote, the weird stuff.
Well, and also, I'm not sure if you saw the piece in the New York Times where they had access to emails from a previous colleague where Vance eviscerated Trump, called him a reprehensible human being. In other aspects, pro-trans rights, something which President Trump wouldn't be. So complete conflict of what you'd expect from a Donald Trump vice presidential candidate. And I think that's going to dog him throughout the campaign.
Mairead?
I think it's quite interesting because I think that whole Walsh pick will be interesting to see how that develops, because it does seem, especially when Biden, I suppose, was in the running, that maybe there was an element or a larger element of those who were considering maybe not voting. So that kind of younger, more progressive element, and whether Walsh was a kind of a pick to try and to appeal to that, whether that will work or not, will be quite interesting to see, I think, because I think it was the unions as well who had kind of said that Walsh should be the pick. So how they'll mobilise around him as well. But then to see if that is just simply a nod to those younger, more progressive maybe people, or whether it'll actually come into action. So we saw there, I think maybe 2 days ago, the protesters, the pro-Palestinian protesters, and they were at one of Kamala Harris's rallies and then being shut down. So whether, you know, and that is still an issue. Like, you know, that is going to be an issue in that campaign. Like, you know, we're seeing that genocide unfolding in Gaza and we're seeing the US.
But the fundamental thing that most Democrats, irrespective of the small, very vociferous people who are pro-Palestine, most Democrats are pro-Israel. That's the reality.
But if we're looking at this pick, right, so there's obviously a reason why you would pick Walsh, right, for a number of different reasons. You've mentioned some of them. some of that is obviously as well to try and target that kind of young, more progressive voter that will not be maybe inspired by others, right? So that was a clear decision making, like if you're just looking at it analytically. So will that be enough to try and appeal those voters? And it'll all depend on what happens over the next coming months.
Yeah, I think we haven't seen Kamala Harris tested yet. And one thing that the Trump campaign has been pointing out is she hasn't done a news conference, which is which is pretty extraordinary.
Did you watch the Mar-a-Lago news conference of Trump?
I watched it, and
it was quite bizarre.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got these riffs that he goes along with. And now that Biden's no longer there, many of these are completely misplaced. It's almost as if he's lost some of his best lines because he's lost his opponent.
Well, that's sure exactly it. Yeah. And it was the best thing about the decision that Joe Biden made to step back. It took away the biggest issue that Trump was talking about at that stage. And Greg's absolutely right. Kamala Harris hasn't yet had a news conference. I presume that's going to be fixed in the coming days. But what is really interesting is, and she's been really strong on the Palestine question. I was delighted to hear what she said about not allowing the continuation of the genocide there. She has picked somebody who offers an a different perspective to her in terms of age, gender, background, etc. So you'd have to think the Democratic ticket, on the one hand, is the more rounded ticket. And then when you look at it compared to the two guys on the other side, both of whom I think are deeply disturbed people in their own ways. I think, you see, for us, it's a very easy choice, but hopefully American voters, and I think Mairead makes the point that there are people who are looking at the previous election saying, I don't know there's anybody here I want to choose. Now they have a choice, and hopefully they'll make that choice, because I'm in no doubt as to which ticket is of benefit to the world as well as the United States.
On that positive note, thank you all very much for joining. Mairead Farrell, Sinn Féin TD for Galway West, Senator Barry Ward, Fine Gael Senator, Shannon Spokesperson on Justice, and Craig Hughes, Political Editor with the Irish Daily Mail. That's all we have time for. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show. My thanks to...
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On Newstalk.